Welcome back to the Resonant Life Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Layla Doolittle, and today I am so excited to share an incredibly powerful conversation that I had with stem cell researcher and neurophysiologist Christian Ripot. Christian is a pioneer in the field of natural stem cell therapy and the creator of StemRegen, a plant-based product shown to stimulate the body's innate stem cell release for healing and regeneration. In this episode, we dive into the science of self-repair, neuroplasticity, quantum biology, and the deeper spiritual truths about healing. You'll learn how to activate your body's intrinsic repair mechanisms, how beliefs and brainwave states influence regeneration, and how stem cells connect the realms of biology, consciousness, and energy. This is a transformative discussion filled with actionable insights and higher wisdom for your health journey. Share a little bit more about Christian and his background, as you will be fascinated by how much wisdom he is bringing to the table. Christian Ripot is a neurophysiologist, research scientist, and the founder of StemRegen, the leading plant-based stem cell mobilizer. With a background in brain research and a passion for consciousness science, he has spent over two decades studying the body's natural repair mechanisms. Christian's pioneering work has led to breakthrough discoveries in stem cell mobilization, regenerative wellness, and the intersection of quantum biology and healing. He is a global speaker, author, and visionary who brings together science, spirit, and self-healing into one powerful message. Welcome, Christian.
Thank you so much. Pleasure.
So you have so many different avenues of wisdom coming in. I know neuroplasticity and functional neurology are a big part of your past, of what has inspired you into founding StemRegen, plant-based stimulation of stem cells. And I think that your journey and what led you into this would be so inspiring to people, understanding how you could take what you're passionate about and bring it into a tangible creation of something that you can back with everything that's within you.
So how I started, well, I would say from a fairly young age, like maybe 13 was a turning point, because I came across a book that was talking about accelerated learning. Mm-hmm. And I become fascinated with the brain, learning, the mind, and everything pertaining to the mind, which is the reason why I decided to go and study neurophysiology, to keep diving deeper into the mind. I would say within about 2-3 years of my PhD, I realized that as I was studying memory and epilepsy at the Montreal Neurological Institute, it was not giving me any insight to better understand the mind. So there's a point in this whole journey I just realized I had lost the juice, if you want, of why I was into all of this. Mm-hmm. And so at some point, circumstances just brought themselves together, and I quit the PhD and went to live into a monastery. Mm. And really, that's what deepened, if you want, all the work that I've done, if you want, in the mind. Then with my training in neurophysiology, when you talk about neuroplasticity and all of that, but it's really work that is completely separate from this. I was hired to study the mechanisms of action and the active compounds in a product, a dietary supplement that was on the marketplace in the 1990s. You may have heard about it, blue-green algae from Klamath Lake, so yes. AFA. So I was hired to study how this was working in the body. And one thing leading to another, we discovered that it was acting as a stem cell mobilizer. It was a completely new science. This was 2001. It was a completely new science. Stem cell was really just emerging. And the idea came starting to sort of get acquainted with some of the early literature. The idea came in my mind that it looked like stem cells were the repair system of the body, and it looked like this plant maybe was stimulating stem cells.
Yes.
So we bought the equipment to count stem cells in the blood. And anyway, making the story short, very soon discovered that plant was triggering the release of stem cells from the bone marrow. So I'm not in the field of immunology, medicine. I come from brain research, but everything shifted, and all I have done since January 2001 was basically with stem cell research.
Wow, I love it. A true pioneer. And this is so important, the way that you have brought together this culmination of the science and studied how we can release our own intrinsic
stem cells to mobilize in our system to support how our body is producing its own stem cells. And I love that it's not this extrinsic stem cell injection. I love how natural it is.
Yeah, I started also to be interested in plant fairly young in my teens. So I would say I always had in my mind that the body has a natural ability to repair. But I was not after that when I did the studies to understand what that plant was doing. I was really just following the traditional scientific approach where you observe something and then you try to explain it. I think you can separate the world of science or scientist, I should say, in two. And it's a gradient. It's a spectrum. You know, there's people all along the spectrum. But at one end, you will have the people who would say, if it's not demonstrated by a study, then it's not true. And I find this approach so blatantly ridiculous, you know?
Yes.
There are so many things that are part of the real world reality that still has not been demonstrated in a double-blind study. We need to include proper scientific investigation into the whole process. My process starts from never denying reality. If I observe something and it doesn't fit my belief, my theory, what I know of this thing, I'm not going to say it's untrue. It cannot be because it doesn't fit with my theory. I will first just drop my theory and just be inquisitive about it.
Yes.
So it's really, I'm sort of at the other end of the spectrum. Quite frankly, I have to be very balanced here and honest. I think we need both. We need the crazies who will go with like sometimes far-fetched ideas, and you need the very solid scientists to come and really put it to the test. I'm a little bit of a blend of the both, but at the same time, I start from a place where let's say that I adhere to Einstein's words when he said a good theory is a theory that should not eliminate or drop one iota of data. So if in order to maintain a theory, you need to include everything that is observed in the real world. So it's really sort of with this mindset that I was working with this plant, and we saw people reversing multiple sclerosis, diabetes, heart disease, severe heart disease, severe emphysema, severe Parkinson. In the case for me that was really the turning point is a lady that had for all of her life, 50 years of her life, deep, deep third degree burn scars. As soon as she started to take this blue renology, she felt that she saw that these scars got inflamed, red and itchy, but she felt that it was healing. So she kept. She kept taking this product, and she took a picture of herself in the mirror every week. And she sent me the photo album, and she said, go through the photo album. And the last picture, she had no scars left. This plant was doing something that we could not explain. And it's the investigation of how this plant was working that one day I came across an article documenting, for the first time to my knowledge, stem cells going to the brain and becoming brain cell. 2000, stem cells were known to be only precursors to blood cells. And in neurology, we know the brain does not repair. So to see a stem cell going to the brain, I thought it was amazing. So that was the starting point to discover that this plant was stimulating stem cell release from the bone marrow. So, but discovering, to go back to what you were saying before, discovering through this scientific inquiry to discover that the body as a natural ability to repair, I find it fascinating because every human being on this planet, without one single exception, have experienced that their body repair. Everybody has had a cut, a broken bone, a sprain, a wound of any kind. Right. And everybody has observed their body repairs.
Yes.
Now tell me, you are a doctor. Tell me in science, where have you heard or when or what have you heard about how the body repairs? You break a bone, we put you in a cast. The doctor will say, come back in 6 weeks. Yes. And then in 6 weeks, it's repaired. But where is the word that says, during those 6 weeks, here what is going to happen. So do A, B, C, X, Y, Z to support this repair process. It does not exist. And it's because we really had no knowledge of how the body repairs, something that is right there in plain sight for everybody because everybody has experienced it.
Yes.
And now the discovery is that it is our stem cells. So the human body as a repair system. So healing indeed comes from within through stem cells.
It's so important that we know that we have access to support and amplify this process because that is something I think we get so far away from that in all forms of medicine, whether it's conventional or the allopathic medicine, and it's just a pill for every ill, or it's even in the functional wellness world, we're oftentimes just trying to like pick and choose various little plants and herbs here and there, but we may not realize there is something so powerful that we just need to get back to that internal, intrinsic, innate healing capacity where our body knows what to do. It knows how to heal better than we do. So let's not just push in different directions certain physiological functions trying to work better than the intellect of our own system. Let's
Correct.
Let the body do the job that it knows best what to do. That innate healing capacity can be amplified with stem cell therapy, natural
Correct.
Stem cell therapy that's releasing the intrinsic levels.
Correct.
I love that.
In most of the drugs, the compounds that are used to affect specific physiological functions, they almost all of them come from plant originally. They've been identified or discovered as part of plants. And the sad system, which is that if something cannot be patented, then pharma cannot make money with it. So it's not utilized. But if they can take a molecule, tweak it, patent it, then they can make money with it. So all drugs are natural compounds, most of them, natural compounds that have been tweaked. But when we tweak them with the aim of making them more effective, and oftentimes they are more effective, but they also become toxic. So most drugs have level of toxicities and side effects, and it is super well known. When somebody starts to get on one drug, then give it about, 2 years, and then they end up on like, half a dozen, if not a dozen of them.
With so many side effects. And then they're treating the side effects with more medication.
Exactly.
It's just a vicious cycle.
So reversing this whole process, most of these compounds, or most, let's say, we can find in the plant world compounds that will achieve pretty much everything that we need for health. And a lot of them work by just leveraging the natural aspect of the body to function, evolve in symbiosis with the environment. We evolve with these plants. We are one with them in a way. So they're there for us.
Oh, I love that. What a beautiful way to say that. It's amazing because the plants have their own epigenetic expression that has been evolving as well. And we have evolved our epigenetic expression. There is diversity in how we are able to handle levels of toxicity in the environment. There are certain levels, like toxic burden buckets, that people can either handle more of that toxicity and more biotoxins and it doesn't affect them as much, or some people just have very low thresholds and are much more sensitive. And that's where plants are able to be more intelligent than what our own genetic system is compromised in and help teach our epigenetic expression to respond better to these types of toxins and things, especially with biotoxins. We can see this, the up-leveling and the upgrading of the immune system. It's the plants that can teach our own genes how to upgrade the light switch. You know, it's like the epigenetic expression is just a dimmer switch, and it's either functioning optimally at its best, or it's dimmed down and dampened. And plants can superimpose that and help communicate to ourselves better.
Yeah, they're definitely much more softer. And you're talking about toxins. I came across an article, I think it was probably 3 weeks ago. A group of scientists, I mean, this fellow's interest was to see how much the human body has absorbed microplastic, nanoplastic. And he took brains from people recently deceased and used a process to dissolve all organic matter. And then a brain of a, let's say, a 70-year-old today who passes, you can find up to about one teaspoon of plastic in their brain.
Oh my gosh.
If you take brains of people who passed, let's say 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and then it's almost like a linear decrease. And the particles are about 200 nanometers. So you find them actually in cells, and the source is all the plastics that we're exposed to, water bottles. I mean, everything. Yes. It's ubiquitous. I was shocked.
That is amazing. Wow. I'm glad that somebody did the research on that, because I find that so fascinating. I even have seen, just in my 8 years of practice, I've run many functional MRIs to see how the brain is either atrophied or inflamed in which areas, so that we can do functional work on the areas where maybe some more support is needed. And like mold toxicity can atrophy certain parts of the brain while others become very inflamed and probably oftentimes it's because of the toxins, but I'm seeing so many more white matter hypointensities and these little, the plaquing that's in there, it's just coming up with so many higher levels. And it's oftentimes when somebody has a history where they've drank out of plastic bottles for years, or they are using aluminum foil while they're cooking.
Plastic and microwaves.
Oh, gosh.
It's probably the worst.
Anytime that they get takeout and it goes home with them hot, that's just mobilizing so many microplastics. It's amazing how many sources. And it's interesting because the level of white matter hypointensity there is significantly higher. So how do we get to that point of helping to clear this out? In addition to mobilizing the stem cells, we can also amplify our own ability for our system, our own upleveling of our detox pathways to help get rid of these things so that we have a fighting chance.
Yeah, there are ways to detoxify. I don't know if at this point there are ways that are well known to detoxify plastic because it seemed to really like fat. And that's why it bioaccumulates in the brain, because there's a lot of fat matter in the brain, lipids in the brain. So they get absorbed and they stay there in cells. So I don't know what can pull them out of cells. But other than this, there are a lot of protocols that can really help detoxify the body of all kinds of things. Ibu, even if you don't go to the extreme of Ibu, there are dietary approaches that can really support liver function and help detoxify. Yes.
And just amplifying your own immune system response. Like our immune system, we think very clearly about how it responds to biotoxins, and that makes sense to us. But oftentimes our immune system helps with detoxification and helps with at least sealing up that blood-brain barrier and supporting the protective mechanisms. And that's something we could also talk about with Stemregen, is the barriers. There are so many barriers in our body. We have the blood-gut barrier, blood-brain barrier, blood-lung barrier, blood-sinus barrier, blood-skin barrier, you know, all of these things that are our first line of defense before it even gets through whatever it is, biotoxin or environmental toxin, that our system then has to deal with. And so if we're just supporting how our own body is healing and sealing up these barriers, then we have a much better chance of our system being able to flush it right out as soon as it does come into our body.
We talk about stem regen or stem cells in the line of what you're talking about. Indeed, we can go to these barriers, but like put them into a much more general context. It's really to understand that not only it's the repair system, but it's also the maintenance system or the renewal system. We lose cells every day. Put it this way. We experience aging, and everything is the same for every phenomenon in the body, but we experience aging a little bit like an old fence in your backyard. Every year, it's a little bit more decrepit and it goes down slowly. We see it that way, but the body is not that way. The body is a dynamic balance between two phenomena. It will be a little bit like having a bucket of water with a hole at the bottom. So you're losing water, but you fill water from the top. And as long as you fill as fast as you're losing it, your bucket seems not moving. And if your hole at the bottom, let's say the water, your way to fill it is a little bit slower than how it's being emptied at the bottom, then you see the level slowly go down in the bucket. And you would say it's going very slow, but it's not what's happening. It's a dynamic process of water escaping and adding water. Health is exactly the same. Every single organ and tissue of the body is constantly to a process of tissue turnover. You lose cells every day. They need to be replaced. That's the role of stem cells. As we age, we have a drastic decline in the number of stem cells in circulation. In our 30s, we've lost about 90% of them. So there's a point, as tissue are losing cells, there's not enough stem cells to offset that cellular loss, and tissues don't have the ability to repair as well as they used to. And that applies to everything in the body, including these barriers. So while stem cells won't have an effect by themselves into the detox, they will have an effect into helping to repair the liver, regenerate the liver, regenerate blood-brain barrier, regenerate any part of the body. They're all dependent on that natural ability to repair and renew. So in that way, stem cells are absolutely central to every aspect of human health.
Crucial. And I think it's the most important thing that we can put into our body as information. We're putting in information from so many different sources, and our body hasn't felt safe in so many different ways. So oftentimes it becomes resistant to information, whether it's because of traumas or stressors or biotoxin burdens or overload and environmental toxins. Our body gets into that, you know, cell danger response where it just says it doesn't feel safe. So it's not open to receiving in information on the receptor sites on the cells, which is information from many other plants or supplements or herbs or things. And that's why many people get so sensitive to certain big detox protocols, and they're just trying to heal and regenerate physiology or function in organ systems. And whenever we go back to the foundation of just getting the stem cells turned back on in the body, allowing for our own organ systems to start healing themselves, the body starts listening to all information better. Those signals are received in such a better way, and it's more receptive, more open. And it's interesting because barriers are like that within the body, as well as in our own organ systems, in the physiology of how our function happens in every organ. Our body is constantly sending signals of how it's functioning. Is it functioning optimally, or is it down? Is it decreased? And when we have two or three of these organ systems turning off or turning down, then the body just starts to create a cascade, and it's like an exponential effect. Like you were saying, the dynamic effect of it, we may not be on just a linear trajectory. It can compound in so many escalated ways. And so the stem cell therapy as a foundation holds and maintains into that increasing level of physiological function where the body knows exactly where to send it. Whatever is less functioning than it should be, that's where the system is going to take these signals.
I think you're right. A lot of people do not realize the degree to which every single organ of the body is pretty extensively innervated by signals coming from the brain and going back to the brain. And when it comes to stem cells, you know, I was always fascinated. When I was a kid in Montreal, I remember reading an article in a newspaper of this young man. He was probably in his early 20s, and he dove in a pool and he broke his neck because there was not as much water as he thought. Yeah. So completely paralyzed. And he spent the next 2 years spending every day in his bed, visualizing light going in his spinal cord and reconnecting his spinal cord.
Yes.
And after this period of 2 years, he regained full mobility. He was walking completely.
Wow.
And it was like an anomaly, if you want.
Yes.
Medicine would tell you it can be. It was a true story.
Yes.
And it just stayed with me over the years. Like I remember it. And when I was studying my neurophysiology, I was always wondering, you know, what was the real story with this fellow? And getting into stem cells, I'm not telling you that I have an explanation, but I'm starting to see now that everything is starting to connect in terms of a fundamental physiological system that could explain this phenomenon, because nothing in the body repairs without stem cells. They are your repair system. Nothing in your body will eliminate an infection, or an infection will not go away from your body without the involvement of the immune system. That's the job of the immune system.
Yes.
Or repair. Nothing in your body repairs without the repair system. If anything stimulates the ability of the body to repair, it's because one way or another, it's leveraging and stimulating stem cells. So this fellow had to tap into stem cells.
Yes.
So what we know today is that stem cells are the repair system. To release stem cells from the bone marrow, the various compounds known to release stem cells, if you inject them into an animal, but before injecting these compounds, you block noradrenaline transmission, then you block stem cell mobilization. So there's a neurotransmitter released through signaling from the brain going to the bone marrow that is essential for the process of releasing stem cells. Once stem cells have been released, stem cells have receptors for all the main neurotransmitters, dopamine, serotonin, noradrenaline, and so on, GABA, and so on. So stem cells, therefore, can respond to brain stimulation. You have nerve terminals in all the microvasculature of your body, everywhere throughout your entire body. So which means that you could, with brain stimulation, activate stem cell migration into a tissue. So now you start to think about visualizing the release of stem cells. And when you start to visualize light, the light, it's not that there's light in your spinal cord. All I'm saying is that now your brain's attention has been this area. So how it translates from visualization to brain function, that's a black box that we have not yet
We talked
explained, and
about.
it would be fun to explain. My
Yes.
simple point is that biological mechanisms are there to see
Yes.
how, when you activate brain function in a certain way, you can actually support a coordinated response in the body, which in
Yes.
this case could mean healing. So I find it fascinating how the brain and how we can, with our will, volition, we can
Yes.
actually impact this repair process.
Oh, I love that. And that is what I'm so passionate with is the functional neurology of the neuroplastic pathways, the rewiring, the connecting of the neural synapses. And that's how we're able to gain higher states of brain function, especially in certain lobes or pathways or cranial nerves of the brain. And taking that into this other realm of consciousness expansion, visualizations, and neural encoding techniques. And a huge part of it is bringing in imagination of light frequencies, certain code frequencies, certain scalar frequencies, and things like that, that the brain can recognize and alter its own brainwave expression so that it's able to go into these deep states where deep healing can occur, like the theta or the delta states, or just more of the alpha coherent states, even. There's so many opportunities that the brain has to go through these different wave patterns so that it can heal. And if we just take that to another amplified level of providing the system with exactly the tools and the building blocks that it needs so that it has like the construction materials that it can then utilize exactly in the place in the way that it needs to, and the brain is connected to every other organ system. So that's one of my favorite ways of using StimRegen is pairing it with neural encoding techniques like that. And so the body's just ready to reconnect, rewire, rehabilitate, regenerate, and go back to that optimal functioning.
If you talk to most stem cell scientists today, they'll tell you stem cells cannot go to the brain. Yet remember, the first article that really started me in all of this was a study of stem cells shown to go from the bone marrow to the brain and becoming brain cells. I think the phenomenon exists. Stem cells do go to the brain. The transformation in the brain is not all driven, not true, not driven. It's not all achieved by stem cells, but it is driven by the stem cells. And although in science right now, studies have shown that the impact of stem cells is limited in the brain, it's impossible for me to not, at the same time, how could I say? I have seen so many cases. We have published one case, for example, of severe Parkinson, 15 years of evolution of Parkinson. And within 6 weeks of just releasing his own stem cells, this man essentially resumed a normal life. We have
That's
started
amazing.
now a new study with StemRegen in a clinic in Madrid with Parkinson. So we have now just 7 patients that have gone through the protocol of 6 months. But of those 7 patients, we have an average reduction of about 60% in motor symptoms, about 30% reduction in depression, and 53, 56% improvement in quality of life.
Oh,
So
that's amazing.
we have an effect on the central
Yes.
nervous system. We
Yes.
have a case that we have published as well. This is a fellow. He was the former president of the Philippine Breast Cancer Society. So he was an oncologist surgeon, and he had a
Yes.
stroke. He was
Yep.
78. He had a stroke. And for about a year, he had stopped working. He was paralyzed with aphasia. And he started to take the product that we had at the time.
Yes.
And within a few months, he recovered all of his mobility, resumed playing tennis, resumed
Wow.
speaking completely normally. And then we started to work together. It's
Yes.
from him that I got many, many cases. Anytime he had a case, I
That's
would ship him
amazing.
some
Yes.
product. And we documented these cases. So you're talking about a stroke with repair,
Yes.
Parkinson. We've had cases of Alzheimer's. I'm not making the claim here this product can reverse
Yes.
Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, stroke. It's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that I cannot remove from my brain the observation of cases that clearly show that if we trigger the release or support the release of one's own stem cells, it
Yes.
does have an effect in the brain. And it's
I
hard
love.
to say that when you recover from a stroke or Parkinson, that it's not taking place through neuroplasticity. So to me, there's no question that
Yes.
stem cells play a role in brain function and can play a specific role in neuroplasticity. So the
Yes.
main question now becomes, how do you drive that neuroplasticity? You can provide the building block for it, but you need to drive this neuroplasticity. that's
I
when
love
it started
that.
to shape, to go into place of a, sort of habit forming behaviors, habit changing behaviors,
Yes.
meditation. That's when we drive into areas where we can have an impact on this neuroplasticity.
Yes. Yes, of course. And there's so many amazing ways that once we're adding in the exercises, the functional neurology therapies and exercises, we're able to stimulate the different lobes of the brain or the cranial nerves that can activate those certain pathways. And we can see on electron microscopes and see on a functional MRI or see on neurofeedback and various scans, we're able to see the effects of it. And so there is a connection of the afferent pathways of what is being taken into the brain of the information. Those signals are absolutely optimized by stem cells mobilizing throughout the entire system and through healing and regenerating and optimizing the function within each organ system. And we were mentioning about central nervous system. Maybe there isn't research yet, which we know science and research is all just catching up to reality and the quantum world eventually, they'll be able to explain it. But there is, at least the peripheral nervous system, which is constantly receiving in signals. And those signals are beyond just the actual physiological or biochemical effects of what that's receiving. It's also electromagnetic in nature, and the electrical properties are sending signals to the brain and to the central nervous system. And there's the biofield. And this is where it gets more into the quantum biofield of things and how we feel things. So one way that our listeners can think about this is whenever we get that gut feeling or we feel that clairsentience, that's our body telling us something. Maybe it's telling us something about a food or a supplement or whatever. If it resonates with us or it doesn't, we might understand that that's our body telling us it's not feeling safe and to retract. Well, that's in that polyvagal sense of how the perceptive signals are going into the brain. Our body, our biofields can be upgraded when every system is sending out those signals of optimal health and functioning. So you're healing the entire body, healing the biofields, healing the frequency too.
I think you just put the finger on something that I think is probably the most, what's the right word here? The most archaic view or part of knowledge of neurology. I think everything you just described, we have a feeling for it in the body, but I don't think it comes from the body. And let me explain this a little bit. When I was doing my PhD, I wrote an article at the time. So I was what, 19, 20, 19. I wrote this article and I got a little bit of flack for it. So at some point it created like a little bit of conflict with my professors. Actually, it was the starting point of me losing my interest in completing my PhD. But in any case, it was an article in which I was writing about a new theory about phantom limb and phantom pain. And there was a theory at the time by Ron Malzac who was basically explaining the pain gate theory, and essentially explaining that you feel something, but you no longer have the part in your brain. Your brain sends information to a part of your body that is no longer there. So it creates a conflict in your brain and it's experienced as pain. And I was just thinking, it's very abstract, a conflict between two areas of the brain, and it generates pain. To me, it was kicking the can down the road. So how do you explain now that a conflict creates pain? So as I was writing about all of this and thinking, if we don't understand something, why having a theory that is halfway there? Let's just say we don't understand. And obviously it was not well received by him and my professors. But in this article, I was showing, trying to expose some of the parts of neurology that I thought were in that field of sensation, because people have this phantom limb, the hand is gone, and they still feel things with their hands. How do you feel things when you've lost your hand? I mean, this is pretty interesting.
Yes,
And in
it
all of this, I was describing the fact that when you sense something, you
is.
touch something, let's say wood. People who know wood very well will tell you, I'm touching cherry tree. I'm touching maple tree. I'm touching, no, this is false wood. You're touching glass. And yet, the only sensors you have in your skin are sensors for pain, cold, pressure, pain, heat, pressure.
Yes.
That's all you have in your fingers.
Right.
And when you touch, all you have is sensation for pressure. So,
Yes.
and the only signal that these sensors will send is an action potential, meaning an all or none signal.
Yes.
It sends a wave of electricity. So the
Yes.
only thing will be the frequency of these action potentials and the duration. So
Yes.
how can you, with just frequency and duration, be able to say, I'm touching maple tree, cherry tree, wood? To me, the physiological apparatus to feel does not give you that level of dexterity. And if you cut that hand, some people still have sensation.
Yes.
Meaning the true sensation, the wholesome sensation of the body is actually not in the body. I will leave it there because I never studied it more deeply. I left it there. I went into a monastery that I came into stem cells. So I never studied any of this further.
Wow.
But you just put the finger on something that I believe it's not taking place in the body.
Yes.
We feel the echo of it in the body. But
it's
not from
you
there.
Say it. Yes, the frequency, the field, and then that knowing that is developed. And really, in essence, whenever we go into the quantum realms, like everything that we experience as matter has just been trained into patterns of belief. So we believe and we are actually having impact and effect on everything around us. And whenever you are looking at an atom, when you're visualizing it, expecting it to be the certain frequency, the certain space, the certain type of spin, the certain way, it is. It's there. And it's that expectation and the intention and the attention that actually brings it into reality. And same thing, it's like with wood, even it's like getting an essence of, we could say, that connection with the element of wood and with the way that the elementals and just the way that it's all come together to create different forms of wood. There's different textures and different senses. And you're right, our nervous system is picking up on something that's so much deeper. And you're definitely highlighting in even stronger theory, I think, to show that proof of that the quantum realm is neurophysiologically amplified, or there's a capacity for us to train it and to train how our own system can be receptive to new information. And therefore, now we get back to something that's even easier to talk about, and that's shifting and understanding beliefs. So if our brain didn't have the capacity to understand that entire concept because it's so foreign and so far-fetched, and because we just didn't get trained in school to study in certain ways or to be free to open our mind to so much that then our own wisdom can come in, so many theories can come in, and then we can believe so open-mindedly, because we oftentimes get trained into filters and we put on these blinders just because this is what science can prove and this is what isn't. And therefore, all of this about reality maybe isn't reality. And so people just get into that loop where they put on their little blinders. But it's so simple to just open up the prefrontal cortex and allow in new patterns of thought, new patterns of wisdom to flow in.
Yeah, there's no doubt. It all goes through the brain. It all goes through neuroplasticity. I'll push it a little bit further.
Yes.
For me, borrowing from Dzogchen, from Sanatana Dharma, from deep Buddhism, like pulling from all of this. Oh, let me put it this way. Let's take the experience of near-death experience. The body is dead. The brain is flatline. There is zero mental activity.
Yes.
So the mind is gone. And the person has a sense of a greater identity, an identity that has much greater understanding of all the things that they were caught into their lives. It's devoid of regret and guilt. They simply look at it and it's almost like, huh, why was I stuck into this?
Yes.
And they see themselves with love. It's everything that we hear about, you know, that is beyond being human, if you want.
Okay.
Then they come back and they retake the suit and they refit their identity, their story, their trouble, you know, their opinions, their beliefs, all of that. They still have the flavor of what they have experienced, but they've come back with that identity.
Yes.
And I'm saying all of this because that phenomenon of near-death experience, to me, demonstrates something that is what we have a big problem everywhere in the field of science and or being human. We try to grasp everything with the mind.
Yeah.
The mind goes through the brain. The mind is part of the brain. The mind is logics. The mind is comparison. Something is tall because it's beside something that is smaller. Put it beside something that is taller, it becomes small. Everything is comparison. The mind absorbs something always, always through the filter of past experience. So my past different than your past, our minds will work differently. And yet, when you go past the body and the mind, everybody will see the same reality, will perceive the same reality. So my point, the reason why I'm bringing all of this is that I think in order to grasp everything that belongs to quantum, to grasp where all these feelings experience in the body while we are identified with the body, they're not in the body. The moment that we experience who we are outside of that body, I think that we will have an immediate understanding of everything that we're talking about. The complexity is because we try to squeeze it into an extended primate brain, you know?
Exactly.
We're not very far from the monkey.
I love that. So the spirit wisdom and the spirit knowing that is so much broader and more capable of understanding to higher levels. I have so much desire to bring in more of that wisdom from this realm. And that way I'm not just thinking with my own neuroplastic pathways of what's been built through my years of study and such. And as you're saying this, yes, near-death experiences can be a wonderful opening to this. Like, I had a car accident when I was 16 and fractured my orbital bones above and below and had hemorrhaging on over half my brain. So I was out completely and had this near-death experience. And about 8 hours of me being in this space where I did choose to come back into my body because I knew I had such a big mission to fulfill on this earth. And I knew I had to become this practitioner that I am so I could share wisdom in this way. And so that experience, though, led me down this realm of just studying consciousness and studying and understanding where it was that I was with my spirit in this space that was so peaceful and just this expansive knowing. And now I've been constantly working on the lifestyle factors, meditation factors, whatever it takes to open this brain to take off the filters and to allow more of that spirit wisdom to come through.
Beautiful, beautiful. And the message to me is not, of course, we're not telling anybody go and try to have a near-death experience.
Yes, definitely not.
but the message is just that there are so many, I mean, you just Google them. There are so many of those stories.
Yes.
Once you've listened three or four of them, I mean, you get the message. And the message is just to basically understand what you think you are today is not it. We're not that.
Exactly.
Not this body, because there's something else that lives beyond this body. And it's not born at the time of death. It's there right now in us.
Yes.
We do not experience it because we believe so much that we're this. We are so identified to our story. When you look at just about any human being, they're really a bundle of memories, habits, and fear.
Yes.
That's what we are.
Yes.
And identify with it. You know, you get people who have, and I say this very respectfully, but people sometimes have a very traumatic past. And today it's affecting their lives, but it's in the past. It's not today. Yes. So why is it? Why is it? It's because we feed these things. We identify with them. If I drop the drama that I lived in my past, it's almost like I drop a part of me and we feel attached to it. So what I'm saying is that we identify with a bundle of stuff that are every single one of them, every one of them are a barrier and collectively form the barrier for us to experience really who we truly are.
That is exactly right.
So there's nothing that we need to like bring in. All we have to do is just let go. Oh, it's a whole process of eliminating these things, which at the end of the day, it's simple conceptually.
Yes.
It's just like everything you are, you think you are right now, take a distance, stop now and observe it. Observe it without dancing with it, without interacting with it, without judging it, without doing anything with it. And you will quickly realize it's not you.
Right.
It's just a label. It's a suit. It's something that we have decided it's baggage that we've decided to carry that we can let go. So to me, that's where near that experience is interesting.
Yes.
That it gives us a glimpse of really all these people that have had these experiences. I have the same. If I have a near that experience, if I die, Because sometimes we think, you know, people die, let's say in a car crash, and we're sad for them. It must have been terrible. No, it was not terrible. Everybody who has that, without an exception, come back and say, it was so beautiful.
So peaceful.
Fine. It's fine. When people die, they're fine. Yeah. Everybody's fine. So imagine what is you beyond that transition, if you want, and try to be it today. And the process of being it is first starting to realize everything we think we are, actually, we're not that.
That's exactly right. I love that. It's like layers of a veil. And the more layers that we have, the more the shroud just is so thick that we can't see through it. It's like a fog. And the density is so intense. And it takes so much effort, so much strength, so much energy to keep holding up these layers in this facade. And so we just start dropping them one by one. And as the veils come down, we start seeing more clearly and get that taste of that exponential love, peace, and it's infinite. And just then we're able to experience that taste of that wisdom. Whenever we know the truth, whenever we know what is there, then it's just like an insatiable craving that we have to go further.
And what you're describing there is a really good way of learning the process of dropping the mind, because the moment you get a sense of a feeling of something, a real intuition, normally, until you've trained yourself otherwise, normally within a tenth of a second, the brain jumps in and says, but is it true? Should it be this instead? Maybe I should add this to it to make it better or stronger. And then suddenly you start to weigh the pros and cons, and that's it. It's from that tenth of a second later. If we let the mind jump into it, we've just screwed it up. Because the real inner knowledge is there if we don't add our little opinion to it, if you
will. Yes. And it is like that monkey brain that some people refer to it as, or the perseverating thoughts. Whenever it gets into the habit, it forms ruts. And so we get this philosophy or this way of thinking where we have to rationalize everything or overanalyze everything. And it just becomes very habitual where it's hard to retrain that. But that's one of the reasons why tangible techniques like habit retraining, which is, you know, going through breath work and going through daily meditation, morning and night, just setting intentions, journaling, like just going into this, you know, very intentional way of being and way of guiding your day so that you're staying in this higher frequency or this way of experiencing and expressing yourself, then it reforms that rut, which is just neuroplastic rewiring. It's just integrating and upgrading where the synapses were connected and replugging them in somewhere else where they have better use, better functioning. And then we have such an abundance of energy to use elsewhere where it's more necessary.
habit. I mean, any techniques to change habit is
yes.
I mean, we are bundles of habits. You ask anybody on this planet, stop right now, take three big, deep breaths, and then think for yourself, what are the three habits that you have right now in your life that are blocking you? Everybody will give you a response in 30 seconds. Yes. Everybody knows what are the habits that is limiting them. And if you stop and you look at every single one of them, they oftentimes look like a mountain and they're just a little ditch. They're not a big deal to get out of it.
Yes.
It just takes one little effort, one little effort of discipline, and you can get out of them and you can create another ditch into another direction. And but we can be in them for decades because they seem big, they seem hard, and oftentimes they're not. All it needs is a technique, a way to change them, and they are habits. You don't do them for 2-3 weeks, they're gone, and you form another one. So there are a lot of good techniques to change habit. It's fundamental. Everything that we've talked about, it starts by habits.
Yes, it does.
Changing habits is where it starts.
100%. And that's where it's amazing, because in just changing our own reality internally, intrinsically, just within our habits, we have a profound impact on our reality externally. So what we're wanting in life, what we're attempting to reach for, our goals, or what we're manifesting, what we're just trying to make sure that we're aligning with, whether that's in our career or in our family or with our friend group or with our children, it's like all a tangible effect that we're able to see shift when we become more aware of where we're translating our energy to, where our energy is being held and invested. And then as we're upgrading these habits, it's amazing because it's a ripple effect around us. And we start to shift almost into another dimension or another parallel reality of just, it's now in an upgraded way. Everything's seamless. Everything's easy. It just comes with the flow because we're more in tune and aware. And then we can pick out and weed out those few little things that may be the stagnant areas or the blockages that could be occurring that are preventing us from creating that perfect reality, that beautiful reality of our dreams.
Yeah. I mean, this concept of creating reality is interesting because I don't believe, with sort of the secret style, you remember that document,
yes.
You just think something, you wish it and it happens.
Right.
I think it's huge disservice to humanity to people believe that that's how it works.
Right.
But at the same time, where that concept holds reality is that, and it's been there, like it's part of Hinduism, Buddhism. Joe Dispenza talks a lot about it today. It's in the Bible, I think. I'm no expert in the Bible at all, but Jesus was saying something like, if you want something, pray as if you already obtained it, something like this. And then the point is just that when we want something, most of the time we sit in the position of not having it.
Yes.
That position of not having it creates all the brain activity, all the neurochemistry, everything associated from the position of lacking it.
Yes.
And this is what we send into the quantum field. And you know what? That's what you receive back.
Yes.
So you stay in that lack. And so oftentimes when we wish for something, and we wish it from the place of not having it, you don't get it because you live, you spend 5 minutes wishing for it and you spend the rest of your day feeling the lack of it.
And then you've proven it to yourself. So you just stick there.
It's a real technique and method to really, and I think gratitude to an extent is the remedy for all of this.
Yes.
You look at the situation that you don't have, and quite frankly, what you have is already pretty good most of the time. It's already plenty. So you look at what you have, and already expressing gratitude for what you have puts you in a whole different place.
Yes.
And from there, to be coherent and vibrate with what it is to be in the place of having what it is that you want, oftentimes that step is very, very small. And it really allows to move into a very different place.
I love that. And with that, when we bring in then the visualization or bring in some of these other elements that are activating the neurology to align with the biofields, with the bioresonance, with the energy that's within our own system, then that's where we're able to get that ripple effect that's exponential, because it's like now we're holding the space for this, and then it's getting an amplified response within our own system, embodying that and bringing that in. And gratitude, like neurophysiologically, it's amazing. There's so many studies just to show what gratitude can do.
I think another way to express it is that it's not about what we wish for. It's not about what we plan. It's not about what we strategize for. It's about who we are. And if you are not the person that you will be when you receive what you're wishing for, then you can't receive it. So it's a shift in identity.
Yes.
You need to be what the person who will receive what you want, be that up front. You know, it's a completely different story, but it reminds me of that story from, it's part of like the stories of the Middle East in Sufism. Yeah. It's this young man who is talking to his friend. He says, I'm looking for my beloved and I want her to be tall and beautiful and brown hair. And I want her to love children, love music. And he goes on and on in describing all the characteristic that he's looking for. And the old man looks at him and he says, yeah, but what if she wants the same?
Oh, yes.
So you need to be that if you want to attract that.
Exactly.
So it's an analogy. It's not the same story.
Yes.
But what it means that if what we want is X, Y, and Z, you need to be the person that can hold the space for those things. Otherwise, they can't manifest.
Yes.
So it's also just an upgrade in identity. Let's put it that way.
I love that. Well, that takes a role in the healing capacity and regeneration capacity of our body. Again, kind of like looping back around to the Simrigen and how amazing this is at activating that own innate capacity to heal. Our system knows what to do. That identity, oftentimes we can hold so
Absolutely.
strongly in what we are because this diagnosis happened and now we have this list of who we are, and we resonate so much with our lack of health because it's our story, and constantly telling that story. And especially I see this all the time in functional medicine. We ask them to tell us about their health history, and it's like they define themselves and actually feel like that is them, that's their
Correct.
identity. And so whenever we try to take it away, it's almost like then they start reaching for other things that they can add to their plate just to prove that they are in this state of dysfunction or that broken, that in lack. And it's not like they want to stay sick. They obviously do want help. They want a way from the suffering. They want a way to go to this state of wellness, but it's elusive. And what is wellness? It's always going to be a wellness journey going towards something. That identity shift is by far what I've seen is the most profound aspect of how quick does a healing process take. We can spend months doing it. We can spend, you know, even years going around in circles until they're ready to just take off those weights, take off those burdens.
Yep.
And like you're saying, the filters need to come off and then allow themselves to put down the burden of holding on to that identity and shift.
Yeah. Reality does not respond to our mental wish or wishes. It basically responds to our beliefs, like
yes.
what we truly believe below, beyond, under all the things that we express mentally, the true, true fear and beliefs that we have. That's really what the body responds to. So
that's
in the same way that this fellow who repaired his spinal cord with visualization, in the same way, if deep down the belief and the identity that we feed through our fear, through so many low energy processes, let's put it
yes.
this way, maintaining this disease that we have, even if you release stem cells, the same way that you can repair and the same way you can prevent the repair, the same
yes.
brain neurology, the same process is there in the body to heal, but also to prevent the healing. So absolutely, a lot of healing starts with identifying with the healed state, if you want.
Yes. I love that. And that's in that gratitude, because whenever we are experiencing gratitude, we can only do it from a place of that abundance rather than lack. You know, we can't cultivate like an intrinsic gratitude feeling whenever we're just focused on the pain and the suffering or the health crisis or the issues or the lack of financial freedom or whatever it is that we're focusing on. We keep creating more of that in our reality until we can get into that true intrinsic state of gratitude and release all those biochemical and physiological impacts to further show our body and prove to our body that we're in a state of gratitude. And that's where that healing occurs. And that's where those reality shifts are able to occur. I love it.
Beautiful, isn't it?
Yes, it definitely is.
So I think there's something that there's a huge shift that must happen, like in humanity. It will obviously start with a small number, but it's this concept that spiritual growth, evolution, being more harmonious, being more coherent, have better brainwave, whatever you want to say, equates to better health.
Yes.
And take a step back and take Aurobindo, Sri Aurobindo, one of the beacon of spiritual, I mean, he was a spiritual giant of the 20th century. He died of kidney failure. Take Nisargadatta, a giant of spirituality, died in the early 1980s, died of throat cancer. Take Ramana Maharshi. Is there a figure, you know, of the last century that was like bigger in terms of spiritual teaching and spiritual accomplishment? And he died of throat cancer. And you go on like this. And the point, I think, is just to understand, to reach your true identity, who we are after death, after near-death experience that we talked about, to reach that identity is the goal of it. You
it
come
is.
Back here until you reach the point where you discover, without dying, without the death of the body, discover your true identity.
Yes.
Discarding the body is irrelevant in the process.
It is.
You will have many of them. So to think that one equates to the other, it's just to say, If I'm harmonious, then my clothes will never wear and tear. Like I can wear them eternally. No, it's just part of life. So I think we need to dissociate these things, do everything you can to keep a healthy body so that it can follow you for as long as you can. It can, to the best, not stand in the way of being an obstacle of you being able to really pay attention to your life, be present to everything. So do the best, everything you can to maintain a good health, live a long life with a great health span. But your health is not a reflection of your spirituality and vice versa. They're
Wow, I
completely
agree so
detached.
much with that.
And I think that needs to sink in because we live in the world right now where it's almost like the healthier you are, you're vegetarian, you're vegan, whatever it is, equates to spirituality. It does not. No
Exactly.
link.
I love that. And health lessons and, like even near that death experiences can be such wonderful lessons that we can appreciate. So even if we do have a few health concerns pop up here and there throughout life, that just gives us the opportunity to step up, step in, and to allow for us to receive the wisdom from that lesson quickly and then shift out of that as much as we're able to. If we're able to take Stemregen to start healing faster, great, let's do that. And also, that gives that opportunity for us to know our body, our vessel that we're in, it is a suit. It's something that we can remove and move on to that beautiful, blissful, peaceful, loving state. And that is going to be such a wonderful reward from going through a life where there are so many wonderful learnings that we also experienced, but they're not as easy. And that's where it's, so important to just be so intentional and be so present, so aware, so on purpose that every single day you're fully clicked in, fully in the driver's seat, and fully aligned with who you are. That would be like one of my main goals for why I do consciousness work and, meditation and things.
It's only the body. I had a deep, dear friend of mine a few years ago went through some health challenges and almost died. And every single day that I would talk to him, how it's going, every single day, what was coming from his mouth was like, the body is struggling, but the consciousness is perfect.
I
So it's
love
just to
that.
realize it's just the body. It did not affect him one bit in his mood, in his joy, in his like. Not affected one bit. It's just like, I just need to give a chance to this animal to kind of heal itself and then come back and then follow me in consciousness. And so we need to reach that nice balance. It's not a disregard of the body because yogis of the past went to the other extreme, like fasting, extreme neglect of the body with this understanding that the body is nothing. No, it's not the place to go either. Take care of the body. But if let me put it this way, you reach perfect health, you live 150 years old. If you not realize who you are truly, it's a life that is, I wouldn't say wasted, but you'll come back. You'll come back and take another shot at it. So being healthy and live long by itself is not an achievement that is really meaningful.
Wow, that is so important. I'm so thankful that you shed light on this because this is very important for people to shift the concepts, shift their understanding, and understand that the consciousness and the body, that we really need to know that it is not intrinsically dependent on how the body feels. And therefore, that cannot be our excuse for why we're not fully trying to align with higher states of
Totally.
consciousness or just align with ourself, our spirit
And
more.
yet, I would say pretty much everybody today in our world, when they do develop a disease, that becomes the break, the obstacle, the reason, the excuse for them to not do the work to continue to grow. I can grow once I've resolved that issue. And it is, I mean, we need to understand it's like this is the biggest mistake. The problem of the body has nothing to do with where you go with your consciousness. But in spite of the body, quite frankly, a lot of times it is a good stimulus. A lot of people grow out of the problem. And probably when you think about it, maybe the problem came for that little push, you know?
Exactly.
So
It was you were
another
ready
part
for that
of the whole story.
learning. I love
Beautiful.
that. I'm so glad you shared that. Wow, I could keep talking to you for hours. So what we'll have to do is I would love to invite you back on the Resonant Life podcast at some point, and we will have to share another conversation because I think this kind of wisdom where it's you bringing in wisdom and sharing it with us and sharing so many powerful insights and inspiration, it's so needed. And I am so honored to get to sit here and have this conversation with you. So thank you, Christian.
Beautiful. We can do that anytime. My pleasure.
Yes. So I'll be including all of your links in the show notes as well as our codes. We have codes for Resonance Wellness that you can use for Stimrogen. I love these products. I am on these, and I believe that out of every product out there, this is the most important foundation. And this needs to be the core of anything that goes into your body whenever it comes to supplements. So be sure that you experience for yourself Stemregen, and we'll make sure we provide that in the show notes. And Christian, do you want to share anything about how they can find their way to you? Any way to follow
StemRegen,
with what
yes.
you guys are doing?
StemRegen.co, StemRegen.co. This is where you have all the information on the products that we briefly talked about. I'm on TikTok and Instagram as Stem Cell Christian. I just answer any questions. So if you have a question, put it there. My team will pick it up and then we can address it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
My
I'm
pleasure.
so
Thank you.
grateful for you.
Thank you.